How to Be a Better Valentine. The research is clear. Being in a good relationship isn't just good for your heart and soul, but also good for your emotional and physical well-being. But why does it seem so hard? There are tens of thousands of books about how to have better relationships. If only it were a matter of just a few tips. We'd all then be in strong, healthy, loving, stress-free relationships. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, well, we have just an hour, but it's Valentine's Day, so we are going to borrow Cupid's arrow for a little while and aim for the heart. In the studio, two relationship experts will share what they've learned over the years, and we're hoping for your advice, too. Do you know the secret to strong relationships? Please share. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news update. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. A good relationship is something people have strived for ages, probably forever. But keeping a relationship strong or starting over with a new relationship can be a challenge. On this Valentine's Day, we are going to get advice on all different types of relationship questions. My guest, Erin Oldham, she is founder of Local Flames, a social club for singles that ran from 2014 to 2015. She now uses her relationship, research, and mediation skills in her residential real estate practice. And Neil Satin is a relationship coach and the host of the award-winning podcast, Relationship Alive. As always, we want to hear from you. What is the best relationship advice you've ever received? What advice do you wish you'd received? Email talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, post a comment to our Facebook page, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. And, you know, as always, we are hoping that the audience joins in our conversation. But today, more than ever, this show is about you. So I have brought Neil and Erin here for you. What are your questions? What are your tips? Please call in or email in. So let's start with an article I read this morning, which says that more people than ever before are single. Erin, does that mean 45%, according to the U.S. Census, does that mean that people are having a hard time finding the one, or are people just not as interested as finding the one?
I think it may be about choice and people choosing different lifestyles and potentially being happy with their life and choosing that. So that's where I would start.
What about you, Neil? What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think our culture is shifting. And when you talk about the 45% of people who are single, then you could probably also talk about the 55% of people who get divorced. And that percentage goes up with second and third and beyond marriages. So I think more and more people are feeling like they can make different choices. They're not stuck with a certain person. Or if they're single by choice, which a lot of people are doing, it's because they feel like, well, life has a lot to offer. And so more than ever, our culture is accepting of people who are single by choice or who enter into less conventional relationship arrangements that, mm-hmm. that really serves them in their life.
Yeah, and I should notice that this is census data, so there are really kind of only two choices, which are married or unmarried. And it does note that probably about 11% of single adults say that they're in a committed lifelong relationship. So that should be, that number should be parsed a little bit. But I want to get back to the one of the questions I did have, though. You know, I think traditionally, my generation, my parents' generation, there were traditional places where one met somebody. It was in school or perhaps at that first job. And it seems as if that's changed. And it may be harder, especially once you get past a certain point in your life, to meet someone in some ways. I mean, there's the online dating, but that's a whole nother world. What are your thoughts, Erin, on the difficulty in that search?
I think you're right. I think we have, you know, if you think of high school and then college, we have just a lot of people to pick from. So by the end of college, if we haven't met somebody that we want to stay with for a long time, you know, sort of the pool gets reduced. So I, So I think people have to become more active and actively looking for somebody as they get older, you know, if they're in their 30s or 40s. And in terms of giving advice to people of what to do, you know, there absolutely is a robust online ways to meet people. But it's also, I advise people to get into their passions and think about, you know, if they love hiking, joining a hiking club. And if they, you know, at a yoga studio, you see it's a pretty diverse group that now takes yoga. So engaging in those passions as ways of just getting out and meeting additional people, because I think it is challenging once you get past a certain age.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about the singles club you founded.
So this was in 2014, and I was coming out of my second divorce, and I sort of was digging deep and trying to figure out, okay, so if I'm on a second divorce, I must be doing something a little bit wrong. And so I went through this big introspective journey. And as I discovered sort of more about myself, I really wanted to put an emphasis on, I felt like at the end of the day, what's really important is love and connection. And I wanted to create a way for people to meet in authentic ways. So an offline journey. And we did, we ran like yoga classes and we had wine tastings and hiking, and different experiential ways of meeting people so you could really get to know them.
Tell me some good stories from that time.
It was a lot of fun. We started out with sort of a very big kickoff event where we had hundreds of people come together, tons of energy. And we really did have people meet, you know, like life. They didn't always stay together forever. But we started out, I mean, we had like an event at Vinland and had 14 people come together and do sort of a special event where they got to talk to the owner and eat dinner together. And at every event, we would have an event coordinator. So somebody who was starting the conversation, helping people get to know each other. And then afterwards, we did have a rule that you couldn't exchange phone numbers at the event because we wanted to let people be relaxed and be themselves. And so there was somebody who was at the event that you could go to afterwards to sort of exchange information and do that follow-up step.
Hmm. Neil, how did you get interested in this whole field of experience? I mean, you've been now doing a podcast for several years, lots and lots of listeners.
Yeah.
Where did it all come from?
There's been over 4 million downloads at this point of Relationship Alive, which is pretty amazing. I actually came to it through, like Aaron, some of my own relationship struggles and just feeling like there's got to be a way to do it better and there've got to be people who know more than I do. And fortunately, there are. And then on top of that, I was actually a dog trainer and I found over and over again that the problems people were having with their dogs were a direct relationship to the stresses that they were having in their normal lives, in the rest of their lives. And one of the biggest sources of stress for any person is an unhappy relationship. So I went through a whole coaching program and it was geared toward working with the people more than the dogs. And that kind of led me into discovering that I actually enjoyed working with people a little bit more than I love working with dogs. The dogs are easy, actually. But in the end, you can affect a lot more change by working with people.
And now that's what I'm intrigued. How can you learn something about someone's relationship by helping them train their dog? Give us an example.
Yeah, well, so much of what you see in a dog's behavior is a reflection of the emotional atmosphere that they live in. And dogs are like, when you look at them and you watch their behavior, you can see the stress kind of enter their body and leave their body in a dysfunctional way. And as a dog trainer, or a functional way, as a dog trainer, people typically would be coming to me because their dog had some issue. And inevitably, that issue would be because the dog was experiencing stress and didn't know how to deal with the stress. So in working with the dog, I could help a dog learn how to deal with higher and higher levels of stress and stay relatively social and functional. But if the source of the stress never changed at all, that was the problem. So I would then turn to the person and say, like, okay, so tell me about your life. What's going on in your life? And so much of what I ended up having to do as I worked with people was to help them learn how to be grounded, be present. When they got stressed out, to learn how to find themselves and then relate to the to the people in their environment, or if they were having a problem with their dog, to relate to their dog. And so this is typically a dog, they're like a receiver picking up on this information all the time in their environment, and they're not really built to store it like humans are. Like, we can store up all this stress, and then, you know, that dysfunction will come out a decade or two down the line. But dogs don't really, well, they don't have a decade or two in many respects. So that stress comes out immediately. But then you would see that as you worked with people around whatever was happening in their lives, the dogs would inevitably also settle down. And it doesn't mean that there weren't behavioral issues with the dog or behavioral issues with the people, but you'd be in a much more stable footing to be able to address any of that.
I'm struck by one of the many things you just said, Neil, is that to be grounded and be present. And I know, Aaron, this is a big part of your message today, is the importance of being, the importance to a relationship of being present.
And part of what being, when I think of presence, you know, it's really listening, because to be present, you're fully engaged in that experience. And therefore, you're having to pay attention a lot to that other person and the cues they're giving you, what they're saying, and you're really strengthening that bond between the two people by being present. And a lot of it, in my mind, is sort of like slowing down your breathing and, you know, sitting calmly so that you can really fully be engaged with that other person. And a lot of my early work, I have a PhD in psychology, was just in the studies of attachment, and that sort of interaction helps you build that attachment between two people.
Let me ask you this, though, for somebody, couples who have been together for a long time, whether they're married or in a long-term relationship, it's one thing to be present on your first, second, or 10th date, but when you're living with someone 7 days a week, do you pick times in the day? Okay, this is my time to be present, and this is my time to sort of fade away?
Yeah, I think I picked this up maybe from John Gottman, who's a great author and researcher to look into. But is when you get home at the end of the day, at the end of your workday, is really putting your phone away, putting everything away, and sitting down with your partner and simply saying, how was your day? And then listening to that. And so it's that sort of continual daily engagement, sort of like building that relationship muscle of knowing we have to keep engaging our muscles to keep them strong. So you have to keep engaging in that relationship. And your partner's not going to stay the same over 10 or 20 years. They're going to evolve and change. And so really having those discussions where you can really truly listen and not make assumptions about them, even when you're 20 years in, but you know, try to learn those new things about them, because that's when people feel heard and feel like they want to really engage and stay in this relationship.
Okay, so we're only a few minutes in, and we have two really good concrete tips here to be present, and also to sort of not just make assumptions about your partner as you move through your relationship with them. Neil, what do you want to add to that? Some of the people that, all the hundreds of people you've interviewed, are there certain things that sort of percolate up as the golden tips?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we could talk for a while about the golden tips. I love what Aaron was just mentioning, that John Gottman and Julie Gottman, they talk about the bids that we make for each other's attention. And this could be something like, honey, how are you today? Or it could be like, hey, did you notice the sun is shining today? So these can be things that aren't necessarily direct bids for like a relationship connection, but it's a way of connecting with the other person. And so if you are paying attention to what your partner offers you and you respond positively, so versus negatively or neutrally, then that is a huge way to build your relationship over time. And to highlight that curiosity is really at the root of remembering that you're changing all the time, your partner is changing all the time. And so if you can find the questions within you, so even if you're coming home to someone that you've seen for decades and decades, you know, what is it about them that makes you curious? And if you can't find that, then being able to look at yourself and be like, all right, well, what within me, what was interesting for me today? And how can I translate that into a way to reach out to this person that's with me.
All right. Well, we have an email here from Susan. The key is not expecting perfection, but rather to choose every day to attempt to be present and aware. And kindness always wins, even when conflict is present. 41 years together and still learning. Be present, aware, and kindness.
Go, Susan.
Absolutely.
That's great.
I think kindness really is one of the cores of my philosophy and what I've sort of built into my own life over time. I think when I was younger, I was more sarcastic and tried to bring humor into sort of too many situations. And as I aged, I sort of brought more vulnerability and being real and sort of replacing that sarcasm with kindness, and realizing instead of trying to make someone laugh, to try to make someone feel good might be a better way to build that relationship. So I think that kindness is key.
And that's interesting, though, because that's tricky, because if you read surveys, especially of women and what they're looking for with men, it almost always starts with a sense of humor. So I think men have often been socialized to try to be funny all the time and maybe need to step back a little bit, maybe not always be funny, but maybe sometimes substitute that with kindness.
I think it's a balance, because humor can be paying attention to another person, but it's oftentimes coming from something that we're saying. And I think the kindness comes in paying attention to what makes that other person feel special. So I think maybe it's bringing in a balance. Be funny with kindness.
Okay, we're going to go to Anita, who's calling from Camden. Hi, Anita.
Hi there. How are you today?
Good. Go ahead.
Well, what a great topic for Valentine's Day. I kind of want to look at sort of a advice, thinking in terms of advice that you would give your son or daughter as they are coming into the age of looking at relationships and seeking a partner. And there are a couple of pieces of advice that I always felt were really critical in setting the stage. One is to dig out your copy of Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus, which was published way back in 1992, John Gray, PhD, because it really helps. I think it's essential to learn that men and women do have different ways of approaching things. And if that's understood from the get-go as relationships begin, then it will give a basis of understanding. And then once in a relationship, the book that I'm was really just received as a gift, Hold Me Tight by Dr. Sue Johnson. And she is a couples therapist who does emotionally focused couple therapy. And it really helps give the perspective that what we want from the person that we're most intimate with is a deep emotional connection. And she goes into how to keep and maintain, how to maintain that emotional connection.
Anita, thank you so much for calling with those recommendations. Of course, Men Are From Mars, Women From Venus, a classic. Does it hold up in your view?
I think it is, in my view. I mean, I think men and women, we're all on a continuum, so we're not also like categorized. But I do think that men and women are pretty different in terms of what they derive pleasure from and how they see the world. And so the best we can do is sort of get to know that other person and really ask lots of curiosity questions like Neil referenced.
Yeah. By the way, both of those people, John Gray and Sue Johnson, have been on my show. So there are things, resources there for people as well. I honestly don't think that the gendered thing holds up. I think that in general, there's stuff to get from it. So it's worth reading those books to see like what resonates with me and what doesn't. But if you step away from a book like that thinking like, well, men are this way and women are this way, then you're actually losing what we've been talking about, which is that ability to be present and curious to find out, how about this person that's right across from me? Like, what really lights them up? How do they communicate? What helps them feel safe and held and connected? What scares them? And if you can tune into those things, those are going to be different no matter who you're sitting across from and no matter what their gender is.
So you're saying, you know, take maybe the books that have resonated with Anita, read them, see if they resonate, but don't take them as a Bible or a guidebook necessarily,
right,
unless they happen to resonate with you.
Now, Sue Johnson's work, on the other hand, she has done a lot of research into, she's in attachment theory, which is what Aaron was saying she did a lot of work in. And so Sue Johnson's work is empirically shown to help couples. And she's done lots of studies with her therapy, emotionally focused therapy, and done outcome studies to show that that stuff really works. So while John Gray's work, and Deborah Tannen is another one who's great, that's all about like the ways that men and women are socialized to be different and how you respond to that, it's really important. And there's this whole other body of work that's based now on neurobiology and kind of what we know about what we know now about how people interact with each other that I think is super helpful for people.
Anita, I'm so glad you called in. Other people, please call in 1-800-399-3566, 1-800-399-3566. Our email address, talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. It is Valentine's Day. We're talking about relationships, and we'll be right back.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from Maine Health, a network of hospitals, healthcare providers, and specialists built with your needs at the very center, mainehealth.org. And Thomaston Place Auction Galleries, proud to be a sponsor of On This Day in Maine's History, heard daily on Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical.
What does it mean to be politically engaged? Researcher Eitan Hirsch says it's less about following the news and more about talking to your neighbors.
Instead of hating a random person who says they're Republican or says they're a Democrat, they would say, is this a neighbor that I can convince to move in my direction?
How to acquire political power this week on Hidden Brain from NPR.
That's Sunday morning at 11 here on Maine Public Radio. Do you have a passion for public media, enjoy working with people, and would like to join a public service mission-driven organization as part of our development team? We'd like to hear from you. You'll be working with others who strongly support and want to help grow Maine Public's shared values of civic engagement, lifelong learning, and public service. For more information, please visit mainepublic.org and click on About and then Careers. Thanks.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, advice on strengthening your relationship with your partner. My guest, Aaron Oldham, who founded Local Flames, a social club for singles that ran from 2014 to 2015. She's also got a PhD in psychology. And Neil Satin, who is a relationship coach and the host of the podcast Relationship Alive. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet at Maine Calling or post to our Facebook page. Before the break, we had a call from Anita who was talking about people kind of starting off on their adult journey. And Aaron, you and I have this in common. We have young adults in our lives. What advice do you give your young people?
So I do. I have triplets who are 18. They're seniors in high school, and they all happen to be in relationships that they've had for over a year and a half. Which I have to say is very interesting, having sort of adults, mini adults in relationships. So one piece of good news is I'm on my third marriage, and I feel like I've strengthened myself over time as my relationship skills and being in that. So I think that one piece of good news is people assume that if you're divorced, you know, your kids will not have good models for relationships and may not be able to do that as they grow and get older. So I do want to tell people that it is possible. Like, I really tried to focus a lot of modeling. So when I was getting into my subsequent relationships and building those relationships, I would talk to them about how I was doing that and that it takes a while to get to know somebody. And generally, I think of that as sort of about 2 years to really, truly get to know that person and talk about communication skills. I find my kids coming to me and asking advice. You know, they're wondering why they're hitting a conflict. And so I try to model that and give them tips. There was a recent situation with my son, one of my sons, who him and his girlfriend were having a very, very long talk. They tend to have 8-hour dates for some reason, but they were having a very long talk because she had broken his trust in some way. And he wanted to simply, you know, continue day after day to talk it out. And my advice to him is, you know, sometimes what the best thing you can do is build an environment in which she feels like she can be honest. So you're building that environment, allowing her to be honest rather than saying, I feel like I can't trust you now because you've done something to break my trust. And the other piece of advice I gave him was that sometimes we can over-talk things. And when we start over-talking things, other topics come up from the past and things get too complex. So sometimes it's worth being quiet for a while and sort of getting to know our feelings about it and letting it sit for a while, having some positive experiences together and going forward in that way.
An email from Megan. My niece and her husband, after a long courtship, decided to do counseling before they got married, which they did for well over a year. They got all the bugs worked out before they got married and have a very strong relationship to this day. Neil, do you hear this from your relationship experts that before you tie the knot, it might be a good idea to do some counseling?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think getting support at any step along the journey is really helpful. And most couples are going to have bumps in the road at some points along the way. In fact, the Gottmans were here in Maine not that long ago, and they are very candid about, and these are relationship researchers who have been studying relationships for 40 years and, you know, write the books on what you should do. And they still talk about the conflicts that they get in and the ways that they navigate those things. So I think the gold standard in any relationship is developing skills that allows you to be resilient, to deal with problems like the ones that Aaron was just mentioning, and to come out stronger on the other end. And those are skills that you can learn and that actually carry a relationship forward through turbulent times.
We'll go to Ellery, who's calling from Waterville. Hi, Ellery, go ahead.
Hello, and thank you again for another great program. Quick question. For the true nerds and geeks, and perhaps engineers among us, understanding the language of love is often a bit of a problem with its nuances. And say for example, if a lady says to me, oh, you can come by and visit if you want to, and of course one side of me says, that's a resounding no, not so interested. And another way of looking at it is that it's a positive yes. So how does one really go and understand the nuances, the importance of tone of voice and facial expressions and eyes, hand waves and posture and all of that to create a language that makes sense to someone like a geek or a nerd?
Oh, Ellery, thank you so much for calling.
I love that question. I work with a lot of clients who are in the same boat. And honestly, I think that the best thing that you can do is to learn how to check in with the person in front of you, because so much of that can be like a game where you're trying to figure something out and you feel like you're being spoken to in a language that you don't quite understand. But what actually evokes a lot of power and magic is in a moment like that, and this comes back to the presence that we were talking about at the beginning, to be able to take a breath and say, whoa, like, I'm not really sure what you mean when you say that. And I'm wondering, like, is this, like, are you actually interested in me coming over? Because that kind of lights me up. Or if, in fact, you're not interested, to be able to own that as well and say, you know, it sounds like you want me to come over, but I'm too tired, or I'm learning my limits, and I might still be interested in you. Like, this isn't about me not being interested in you. So as much as we're able to get in touch with our own experience and the questions that we have in the moment and to presence them to the person that's there with us, and I think that's a great application of that kind of very left brain engineering logical approach, is to be like, what am I not understanding right now? And can I check in with this person in a way that invites them into the conversation?
Sure, and I don't think you have to be an engineer to sort of sometimes wonder if there's a code that you haven't quite gotten.
Right.
And what you're saying, Neil, if I'm taking this correctly, is it's okay to say, maybe not in so many words, is I don't understand your code. Please translate.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that is really sort of the key to a lot of, to sort of building that longer term attached relationship, is getting to know, because I feel like sometimes we don't even know our own codes. Like, it took me a long time into my 40s where I was getting to know myself enough and being able to tell, you know, my current husband, my forever husband, hopefully. So, you know, I just told him when I said, when I get about 3 months in, I'm going to get squirrely and I may want to run away. Like I'm sort of, when I get into a challenging situation, I'm a runner. Like I like to get out of that situation. So I just told him that information up front. You know, and if you're experiencing that, can you just give me some space? Give me a day or so, and then I'll come back. I just need to sort of come back into my body, you know, get into sort of my yoga, deep breathing, and re-engage in that situation. So the more that we get to know ourselves, we can just tell people what to expect. Like, it doesn't need to be such a mystery, but I feel like at my younger ages, I just didn't know myself as well. So I probably couldn't have told people as much about me as they needed to know.
Thanks, Ellery, for your question. We're going to go to Robert calling from Buxton. Hi, Robert. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. How are you doing?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm great. And another wonderful show that we all appreciate.
Thank you.
I want to just start by saying a happy Valentine's Day to my lovely wife of 42 years. And it's always been interesting and fun, but I think the secret for us anyway is just be interested in what the other person is interested in. And we both do that. And we've tried to kind of pass that along. We have three children and five grandchildren. And as a father, I ran my own business my entire life. I've never worked for anyone else, specifically so that I could get involved in my kids' lives, in school, and all of the things that they wanted to do. And it's something that we've tried to pass to the kids and grandchildren that they've accepted lovingly, and it's just all been good because partners share these things together. But we're interested in science and music, a lot of the same things. I think really that's the key, is just similar interests and taking interest in what the other person loves to do or wants to do.
So, Bob, let me just sort of ask you, so you're not just talking about sharing hobbies, but also maybe if the other person has a hobby that you don't share their hobby, at least be interested in what they're doing.
Absolutely. That's the key. And we try to pass that to the kids. I mean, I'm just an extremely curious person. I'm curious about everything. So it's not hard to get me interested in things, but my partner's the same way. And, that's been a key, I think, to our success. Plus, you know, the other things, we both love food. You know, we love to cook. We're both good cooks. We garden. We grow most of the food we eat. And, you know, there's things like that that are simple pleasures that we take, you know, great care about. So.
Well, Bob, thanks so much for calling in. Thoughts from our guests in the studio.
Sounds like a lovely partnership.
Yeah, there are two things that he said that just like really struck me. One, I can't remember who, I don't know who said this first, but Terry Real said this to me, which is like a great adage or a mantra for your relationship is to don't worry about being interesting, be interested. So that was something that he was saying super clearly. And then when he was talking about food, actually, that reminded me of this question of presence. And the fact is that when something happens to us or in our relationship where we get kind of knocked off kilter a little bit, what we know now is that we have a whole system in our bodies where the part of our brain that's allows us to be social, to be loving, to be connected, the prefrontal cortex, it literally goes offline and we go into some sort of fight or flight response. And this is normal. It's happening within us all the time. And the more that we can learn to recognize that, the better. And the reason that he made me think of that is because sharing a meal together is a great way to bring your social engagement system back online when it's gone offline, as is laughter. So the importance of humor in a relationship. So having rituals like that, cooking together, laughing together, it actually serves a neurobiological purpose to keep us co-regulated in a space that fosters us being loving and connected with each other.
An email from Cindy. I'm a young adult who has discovered that I have tons to learn about navigating a long-term relationship. It's something no one really teaches you. Do you have any resources for young people in their first long-term relationship?
Well, Sue Johnson's book, Hold Me Tight, is great. The Gottmans book, these are the people that we've mentioned. There are a lot of kind of new classic authors around this. So the Gottman, Sue Johnson, Stan Tatkin, who talks about attachment in a relationship. These are great. And a lot of it also depends on what's happening in your relationship. So you may have one thing totally nailed and then another thing where you need some help. So not being afraid to actually just ask some questions or to reach out to people who might be able to point you in a specific direction, that's probably the best thing possible.
Well, that's a great question. We're going to take some more of those questions when we come back. This is Maine Calling. We're talking about relationships. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566.
Listener support brings us Maine Calling with help from BCM Environmental and Land Law, announcing a merger with Thomas R. Hanna and Associates. More on their Vermont, New Hampshire, and Maine practice at nhlandlaw.com. University of New England, with a campus in Tangier, Morocco, where students can spend a semester abroad, une.edu. And UMaine's Collins Center for the Arts, with Drum Tao 2020 on February 21st. Tickets at collinscenterforthearts.com.
On This Day in Maine's History is brought to you in partnership with the Maine Historical Society.
The Valentine's Day Bandit begins a tradition of covering downtown Portland in red hearts on Valentine's Day, February 14, 1976. Businesses, homes, and landmarks alike are all covered with printed out hearts in the dead of night. The identity of the Valentine's Day Bandit has never been conclusively identified in its 44-year history. Former Portland Mayor Michael Brennan noted that no effort had ever been made to identify the bandit so as to preserve the tradition.
On This Day in Maine's History is made possible through the generous support of Roosevelt Campobello International Park. Happy birthday, Maine.
The coronavirus, now called COVID-19, is starting to impact the economy in China and also in Boston's Chinatown.
After Chinese New Year, normally we are very busy.
On Next, from the New England News Collaborative, the Chinatown restaurants that stand empty.
The desire to stay away from people who happen to have Asian faces, to stay away from Asian businesses.
Plus, we recap the New Hampshire primary. Please join us.
That's coming up this afternoon at 2 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, keeping and forming a good relationship. My guests are Erin Oldham, PhD, founder of Local Flames, a social club for singles. She's now in the real estate business. And Neil Satin, relationship coach and the host of award-winning podcast Relationship Alive. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. So many good questions. I'm going to try to speed it up here. A student at Portland High School wants to know what to expect as far as effects for a child in a relationship of divorcing parents. And we talked about this a little bit already.
Yeah, I think there are going to be a whole range of effects. And I think something that we sort of hear in the media is that it's sort of an automatic negative impact, and I don't think that's necessarily true. So it's really about when your parents were divorcing, you know, how they dealt with that situation, and did they make you feel safe through that situation? Did they sort of talk you through it so you knew what to anticipate? You knew that what was happening, and sort of how they explained why that relationship broke down and why it needed to come to an end. So I think that there's not a single impact from a divorce on a child. I think it's more about how you felt during that transition and then almost the feeling that you took away from that transition. And I think there's lots of parents that do it quite well and, you know, turn to experts to sort of find out how they can encourage. I once did a workshop on sort of how to encourage attachment while you're going through divorce. And it was sort of how you talked about it, how you created what I called sort of a nest so that, let's say there's two homes, that in each of those homes, a child has a place where they feel safe and secure and connected. And there are definitely distinct things that parents can do to create that nest or that feeling of safety and security in each, even if the child now has two locations.
And Kids First is a great organization for helping with that. And we have an email here from Kristen. After being married 14 years, Putting each other first and knowing the other is going to put you first when you need it. Take the long view, not weeks or months, but years. Some years, one person may need more of the focus, and the next year, the other person. And I see you both nodding. We're going to go to David, who's calling from Bangor. Hi, David. Go ahead.
Good day. How are you? First of all, I'd like to thank you for the wonderful slate of authoritarians you usually have on your show to answer questions and whatnot. My point of view is I've been married for 37 years. I always find that in the relationship between two people, there are times when you almost have to experience an out-of-body experience where you might be in an argument with your spouse or your significant other, and you get lost in the moment of trying to make a point or for someone else to express their point. I think what you have to do is step outside of that conversation or that argument as an objective third party and look at what's happening and see if either one of you needs to be a little bit realigned into sharing the grief or the anxiety, the angst that your partner's going through. I know there are not just times of argument. My wife works in a very busy, hectic work environment, and there's always conflicts of personalities. And she brings a lot of that baggage home with her. And it's not, I don't know whether she's for the extent of just venting, which could be the case, but I think for me to try and say, I would rectify it by doing this, or I see where this is going, I'd rather step outside and feel her pain.
Right.
And talk to her as I'm experiencing the same anguish that she's going through, and together we'll find a positive ground.
Thank you, David. I think, you know, and I think it's probably great advice, not just for relationships, but whenever you're in a situation with someone else, try to imagine yourself in that person's shoes.
I think having that empathy, I think listening to somebody, a lot of times we don't necessarily need a solution from somebody else. We really just need to be heard. And I think the caller picked on it, like he's learned those skills and he's learned how to be empathic. And that's fantastic.
Thank you, David, for your call. An email from Ava. My husband Clark and I reside in York and not only have been together since 1980, but have worked as business partners since 1984. My personal thoughts, if you are lucky enough to find your soulmate, you must take care of the precious jewel, gift, or blessing with continual time commitment and nurturing it needs and deserves to endure. Our own therapy is to revisit places we dated and first fell in love to remind ourselves when things get stressful. That's a nice tip.
Perfect. Yeah.
So let's see. We'll go to Marfine, who's calling from Portland. Hi, Marfine. Go ahead.
Hi. Yeah, I just wanted to say, as a millennial and self-described hopeless romantic, that it really took me a while to sort of unpack the idea of like finding that one for you. I also grew in a religious household, so that had an impact on how I approached finding love. But then I read this essay about how the idea of true love and love has changed as economics has changed. And I had a conversation with my best friend last night about how we're setting unrealistic expectations on relationships by entering into them and sort of with the idea that, they're the one. And I think that sets a tone for a relationship that can become strained down the road when it's not looking to be that way. And I just wanted to make that comment from a generational standpoint.
Yeah, Marfine, thanks so much for your call. I've actually thought that a lot of times over the years that people have unrealistic expectations that, you know, the person you're with is a human being and they're not a movie star in a movie.
And I think that Neil and I have talked about this previously, but that if you're expecting that person to be everything from your best friend to your best lover to the person who's there for you all the time, it's not overly sustainable and it's not overly realistic. And I think it's some of the guidance I would give is to really fill your life out so you have other friends that you're talking with about certain subjects. I mean, there may be great, your partner may be fantastic at listening to certain subjects, but may get very tired about hearing about your work. So maybe you need to have a friend that you talk to about your work. I mean, and another piece that I pick up in Marfine's comment is the 85% rule, so that you're not looking for someone who's 100% perfect, but they're 85% there. And if they're 85% there, you can really work with it. And there's a lot there to work with. So forget perfection.
Yeah, as long as the 15% isn't a total deal breaker.
You know, exactly,
that,
exactly.
That could be a problem. I think the culture really is changing. And that's so important to notice, that the ideal of a lifelong partnership, as amazing as it is with the callers that have that we've been hearing from today, those, you know, decades-long partnerships, that in reality, this lifelong partnership emerged when people had much shorter lifespans, and we go through adult development as well as, you know, the development that we go through as children. So we are always changing, and it may be that a certain partner is only appropriate for a certain time in your life. And then I think as a whole, if we can, as a culture, start reducing the shame that people feel around really challenging relationships that have maybe hit their limit or served their purpose, being able to leave them graciously and with kindness and love, and to wish each other well and send them on their way, then that actually will do a lot to alleviate that pressure around the one person being the one person, because they could be perfect for the next year, the next 10 years, the next 20 years, and then maybe it will be time to where you've outgrown each other and it's time to move on in a way that's okay for everyone around you as well as for yourselves.
Marfine, thank you so much for your call. We have a tweet from Larry. I would disagree with the caller. Each person in a relationship needs to have their own hobbies to allow space and individuality. Your spouse should not be someone's hobby and vice versa. So I think that if we take the call and the tweet together, the message is different kinds of relationships can work for different kinds of people.
Yeah, and you don't want to lose sight of who you are in a relationship. So always being interested in yourself as well, and what fuels you and your own passions, so that you're bringing a full you to a relationship.
We'll go to Scott in Lisbon Falls. Scott, if you could be quick, that would be great.
Difficult, yes, but for 200,000 years, we've been hunter-gatherers. And I believe so much of our behavior starts there. I want to put a quick shout out to the sexuality, too, and the book called The Mystery Dance by Lynn Margulis and Darren Sagan about how the evolution of sexuality. But for me, at this point in my life, having gone through a lot, I want gratitude. And I try to seek a moment every day where I have gratitude for my partner, who, though not my empirically first wife, I refer to as my first wife, because it's the first time I really believe that I have my wife.
Scott, thank you for your call. Gratitude, a good practice in so many ways.
Yeah, I think a great ritual for any couple is at night before you go to bed to just offer three appreciations to each other. Like, here are three things that I appreciate you about you. And it could be something huge, or it could be like a tiny thing, like you did the laundry today.
That's huge. Scott, thanks so much for your call. Let's try to squeeze in one more, and this is going to be a big question for just a minute left. An email from Eva. How do we know when to let go of a relationship? How can we tell when the time comes?
I see you breathing, Erin, so I can jump in.
Yes.
Okay. So I think on some level, only you really know. And it can be helpful to get an objective opinion from someone who doesn't have a horse in the race, or whatever that phrase is. And at the same time, I think being willing to acknowledge your own growth and the growth of your partner, and when your paths diverge, if the pain is too much and you're not able to seek help, which is always the first thing I would recommend, is to like get support from a good counselor. But if you really feel like it's not changing and like you're doing more damage to each other, and that on the flip side, if you were to separate, you could actually uplift each other and foster love in a different way, then that might be the right choice for you.
Well, thank you all. The voice you just heard, Neil Satin, he's a relationship coach and the host of the award-winning podcast, Relationship Alive. We've got a link to that podcast on our Facebook page and our web page. And also Erin Oldham, the founder of Local Flames, a social club for singles. She now takes her relationship research and mediation skills into her residential real estate practice. Lucy Suchek ran the board today. Our theme music was written by Mike Jandreau. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.